Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode number 52 of Forever Strength. It's 52 weeks of it. We haven't been, you know, perfect for every single week, so it's been a little over a year, technically. I'm Andrew Coates. I've got Bailey Lau with me, and we have a great guest today, my friend Stephanie Fusnik, and she is a owner of a nutrition coaching company, which has done incredibly well, and we wanted to pull you on today to ask a lot of questions about nutrition for everyday life, strength training, performance, and I know Bailey's going to have some specifics, but thanks for coming on.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Good. So, Bailey, you always like to start out, so I'm going to sit aside for a second.
And I always start out with the same question. My question to you is, how did you get into fitness? And then if you want to talk a little bit about how you got into nutrition specifically.
Yeah, so I've always loved like nutrition, health, fitness, sport. It's always been a big part of my life. I went to university thinking I was going to be a phys ed teacher and then realized I did not have the patience to deal with teenagers whatsoever. Like coaching them was like enough in like sports, let alone trying to get them to do like math or phys ed if they didn't want to be there. I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah.
So then I started personal training in university, working for the university gym there. I worked predominantly with chronic disease. I started working with athletes at first, actually hated it, to be completely honest. I loved like the more unhealthy, more chronic conditions, diabetes, cancer, osteoporosis, cardiovascular disease. That was my jam. That's what I loved. So worked with that, got my exercise therapy certification, did my master's. And then I was running all the chronic disease exercise management programs for a specific area of the health region, did that for a couple years. Then I managed I managed the personal training department at a gym in the city. I did my manual osteopathic therapy as well. So then I opened my own clinic and my own training studio, had massage therapists working for me. And then I've always kind of done nutrition on the side and just kind of like a fun thing to do because it complemented things. But the more I spent working with people in the training environment and the osteo environment and exercise therapy, I kept hearing like doctors recommending like eat less, move more to lose weight. And it's like, okay, I'm dealing with people who are like 300 pounds eating 1200 calories. Like clearly that's not like this isn't working. Like that's not getting them anywhere. So there's got to be something else. So then I started getting a lot into like understanding metabolism a lot better, hormone health, and that made like a huge difference. And then I started working a ton with perimenopausal women just by like chance people working with me. So I really dove into the specifics of that, and like hormones and metabolism are already fairly complicated and like there's just not a very good understanding around it. And then you throw in like hormonal fluctuations during perimenopause and menopause, and it's a whole new ball game. Then you add some like chronic dieting in there, crazy intensity exercise, cutting your carbs, cutting your calories, and doing that over and over and over, and it just really affects people. And then they get into this part of their life where hormones dip down and they're like at a complete loss as to what to do because nothing that they were doing before is working anymore. And they just honestly are so desperate and so lost and just feel hopeless and don't know what to do anymore. So then I just started really focusing on working with that demographic, and it's been amazing. And I haven't looked back since.
Yeah, that's awesome. So do you want to go a little bit more in depth about what perimenopausal is and menopausal and how a person would know where they are?
So menopause is the 1 year that you go without a cycle, and perimenopause is the years leading up to that. It can be anywhere from like 2 to 10 years depending on the person, or people can get thrown into it very quickly with like surgical menopause if they've had like ovaries removed and things like that. And basically what happens during perimenopause, if it's not like sudden onset from surgery, is basically like you're born with all the follicles on your ovaries. There's 3 different types. One produces estrogen, one produces testosterone, the other one produces progesterone. And so as these cells kind of start to die off, as we pass our reproductive prime, they start to produce less, or it's really inconsistent. So then we get this like crazy roller coaster of like one day estrogen might be really high, the next day you might have none. Like it really fluctuates. So really what you want to do during this time in your life, because like, let's face it, if you're doing it for 10 years, like that's 10 years of massive highs and lows, crazy symptoms, hot sweats or hot flashes, night sweats, irritability, brain fog, like weight gain around the middle. So what you really want to do is take this crazy roller coaster that's like really high and really low to like a little kid roller coaster that's like got tiny little speed bumps. It's more manageable. But what happens is like, we're so go, go, go all the time. We're chronically stressed, overdoing ourselves. And that's going to raise our cortisol levels, which then like really affects our estrogen levels, really affects our progesterone levels, making like the highs even higher, the lows even lower, and then making the symptoms worse. And people don't realize that the things that cause cortisol to increase are really low calorie diets, cutting out your carbohydrates, doing a ton of really high intensity exercise, a ton of cardio. So they're actually making things worse because they're increasing their cortisol levels and not even realizing it. They're just doing more of the things they used to do, but before they had the hormonal buffer to be able to deal with those stressors, and now they don't. So it takes a lot less for those cortisol levels to go up and really wreak havoc on your body. So it's like learning to adjust your training and nutrition appropriately and really throw everything you thought you used to know because your body is so different now.
I suppose it's worth also making a very specific point that cortisol is not a bad thing. Mm-mm. Chronically elevated cortisol is really what we're talking about. Because cortisol is actually really essential for any sort of like acute stress response, which is generally fine. Mm-hmm. It's, again, like I said, it's in a constant state that it's chronically elevated. Another thing, what about caffeine and caffeine's relationship in there? Because you talked about all the stuff that kind of goes haywire. How much are people relying on like high doses of caffeine?
So caffeine does raise your cortisol levels as well. We kind of get to a point, like, especially when you find caffeine isn't like helping anymore, typically you're like dipping into like HPA axis dysfunction is what we call it. It's like your brain's ability to really connect to your nervous system, and your stress response is kind of like the best way to describe it. You're kind of in a point where the amount of stress that you're like putting on your body, and caffeine does that too. So if caffeine isn't like doing anything anymore, you're kind of slipping into that like dysfunctional phase where it's like, okay, now your body like can't keep up with the stress and adrenals are starting to slow down. You're having issues like actually maintaining your energy and things like that. But then we keep trying to like push ourselves more, which like stresses our adrenals more. And it's just like a very slippery slope. And caffeine isn't a bad thing. Like I have it in like my pre-workout when I go to workout. I have caffeine in the morning. Having it on an empty stomach isn't necessarily ideal because that's going to raise out levels as well. And it can also really mess with like acidity in your stomach and stuff as well. So it's all in a like dosage appropriate. But like if you're very reliant on caffeine, that's a huge red flag.
Yeah, 8 cups a day might be a little bit too much, right?
Mm-hmm. Not great, not great.
So then when you're working with this demographic, women that are perimenopausal and menopausal, is that something you start with, is educating them about why their hormones are changing? And what sort of information would you start them out with?
So typically we like to explain like, again, kind of like I explained, like what happens during perimenopause, all these things are adding stress to your body. Stress plus stress plus stress plus stress all of the time is not going to result in weight loss. And everyone thinks weight loss is a thing that you're trying to fix. Like you're trying to lose weight. Your inability to lose fat is actually a symptom of something else going on in your body that you need to address. So like you could do all the calorie cutting and all the like crazy exercise and stuff that you want, but if you're not actually addressing where the issue is coming from, it's not going to do anything. So education is really important because then it also gets people to not be upset with their body anymore. Like the amount of women that we talk to that are so frustrated, and they're like, I just hate myself. My body is failing me. I feel like there's an alien came and take over my body. Like I don't recognize myself and look in the mirror anymore. So when you explain to people like literally what's actually happening and there is like a way to fix it and how to address it, it makes people a lot more compliant as well, because the more you understand, the more likely you're going to do stuff because you understand why you're doing it. You understand the purpose, because otherwise it's like, I'm doing this stuff. I don't know why I'm doing it. I'm not seeing change. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. So the more you understand about what's going on in your body, it's a lot easier to want to do the things to change it. Then you're also not hating yourself anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Understanding is definitely a big thing with anything in fitness, really. So how would you say that the hormones and working with them and understanding that goes into working with their metabolism?
Yeah, so like a metabolism, so the way I like to describe it is like, think of like a Jenga tower. So when you have like a Jenga tower and it's all stacked up the way it's supposed to be, you can like put quite a bit of force on it with like a hand and it's not going to topple over. When we think about hormones being like unbalanced or it's out of alignment, that's when we start taking like blocks out of the Jenga, and it takes a lot less stress to topple it over. So that's the way I like to think about our metabolism, our hormones in general. It's like we're adding stress to a very unstable like system. So it's very easy for it to come crashing down or to not work the way it's supposed to. When everything goes back to where it's supposed to be, and it's a more stable environment, then when we add purposeful stress, then you get the change that you want, because you're able to like pay attention to the direction that you want to stress it out, and it's going to come back to the middle. It's not going to completely topple over. So it's all about getting things functioning the way they need to, making sure your all your body systems are functioning the way they need to. You're actually taking rest and recovery appropriately. And then changes start to come. Like, it's crazy how much just like improving, like having more carbohydrates and sleeping better, that influences your cortisol levels. And then it's like so much easier for people to lose weight, or they end up eating more and losing weight. So it's all about bringing everything back to balance. Your body can actually handle stress and have it respond the way that you want to.
Yeah. And do you find that there's a lot of misinformation, especially around women going through menopause?
Oh yeah, a ton. I always have like an issue with like fasting. Fasting is great for some people, but it can be really dangerous for some, especially if it's someone who's having a hard time getting protein in, they're already under eating. Like if you have someone trying to hit like 130, 140 grams of protein in a day, and they're only eating in like a 6 or 7 hour window, that's crazy. And your digestion's not going to love that. You also have to think about like thyroid function. Like thyroid function does, you're at a higher risk of developing hypothyroidism once you start going through perimenopause and menopause. And when you're just female, it's like 80% more likely to be in females than males. And that just has to do with like where your chromosomes cross, just because we have two X chromosomes. And then like doing the fasting and doing low carb, for example, will really decrease your thyroid function. So if that runs in your family, like, and just hopping on some low carb fasting random nutrition guide that you like got because your friend worked on it, like it can be actually be really dangerous and be really detrimental to your health. And that all does ultimately slow down your metabolism, because thyroid does control that. But like there's that false information where it's like metabolism slows down with age, and it's like, well, if you're stopped working out, you're not being as active, you're not eating as well, you're not doing weight training anymore. Like all those things are going to influence metabolism way more than just your age. There's so many things in your control. And I think people just like chalk it up to, oh, this is just the way it is now because you're menopausal. Oh, this is just how it is now because you're aging. And it's like, no, like, is it common? Yes, it doesn't mean it's normal. Like there's so many things that you can do and that are in your control to be able to like improve your health and improve your metabolism. I don't like when people are just like, oh, my doctor told me that, like, that's just how it is, eat less. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, it just drives me crazy, because you're taking away all their power. And that's such vague, like, information. Like, that's not, it's not helpful.
Yeah.
How about keto? Because, I mean, you said low carb, and really keto is one of the umbrella low carb things. I know a lot of women are drawn to the allure of, well, they're drawn to the allure of a system of removing something that can be vilified to say, this is the reason why you're having all these problems. Like one of the, I guess the mantras of a lot of these things is that, you know, the whole like calories in, calories out is fundamentally wrong. Right. And we also have to like navigate this carefully, because there are people who talk about hormones who say it in a way that, well, calories don't matter. You mentioned hypothyroidism. Hypothyroid, like the thyroid is really just like the thermostat of your metabolic rate. And so hypothyroidism is literally like that's downregulated. So it's not that these hormones are defying the calories in, calories out dynamic, which is a very complicated system of outputs. But it becomes in many cases a downregulator of your caloric output. And there are also physiological, hormonal, and psychological things going on that are upregulating nutrition. And you mentioned like chronic dieting. Anybody who's listening is really interested in this. The book, The Hungry Brain, is a great resource for this, from Stefan Guiene. And he explains how hormones like leptin and ghrelin function.
Yep.
And if you get someone who has chronically diets, well, a couple things are happening. Most of these people are doing it in the absence of resistance training. And so cycles of this means probably losing muscle mass as they lose weight, but then repeated cycles of weight gain, the muscle mass is probably not coming back because they're not strength training. So your metabolic rate is dropping because we have a little bit less muscle. So you go back to the eating the way you were before, where you were gaining weight. Now the weight goes back on faster. And when you've dieted and you've lost weight, the body has these physiological and psychological mechanisms that that is saying you're starving, so it will your hunger increases, so hunger hormones increase, so food seeking behavior, food ideation gets much stronger, and there are all sorts of other physiological effects. Do you want to talk more in depth about that stuff and how it matters?
Oh yeah. Like there's so much stuff on this. We had done like a training in our Facebook group on this specifically about like what happens to like the hormones in your body during a fat loss phase and like why coming out of a fat loss phase in a certain way really matters. Like this is why people get such crazy rebound because you don't come out of a fat loss phase appropriately. Like that's a big red flag. Like if there isn't an exit plan for your diet, like that's like a, oh, that's to me, that's so scary. Like I just did my first fat loss phase that I've done in like a year and a half. And the day that I upped my calories slowly, it was only an increase of like 75 calories above what I was doing. The hunger that I was having was like it was crazy. I don't think I've ever been that hungry in my entire life. And I was still eating well, but it was 75 calories above where I was like in for my fat loss phase. But it's like your body is like goes into your fight or flight. It's stuck in your survival mode. And as soon as you give it a little bit more, it's like, okay, we don't want to be here again. We need to store this. Like you're eating, you're taking the time, you're coming out of this fight or flight. We're going to eat more because we need to prepare for when this happens again. Like your body has all of these systems to really like, your body doesn't want to lose fat. Like I hate to tell it to you, say it to you, but like it does not want to lose fat. It wants to stay exactly where it is. And it's really frustrating to hear that. Yeah, like your appetite's going to be higher. The hormone that tells you that you're full is going to be lower. So you're not going to feel as satisfied. Your estrogen levels are also going to drop, which is also going to make you feel less satisfied with food because we have receptors in our brain that actually tell us that. When we have like our higher cortisol as well, we're going to see progesterone dip down, which is going to lead to like some fluid retention stuff. There's all these things that like our body is doing to really try and keep that calories in, calories out. And it's not just how much you eat and how much you exercise. Like there's so much more to it. Like your hormone balance, your health, the type of foods that you're having, the thermic effect of food. Are you fidgeting as much? Probably not. And some people it's like substantially different. Like there's all of these things that really contribute and your body has all of these backup systems to like, it doesn't know that you're just trying to look better in a bikini or whatever it is. All it knows is like, oh, apocalypse is coming. We're like ready. And like, if you're constantly doing this all the time, those signals get stronger and stronger and stronger because your body learns. Like it doesn't forget. Like, it's like, oh, we remember we were treading this water. Now we got to be careful. So it's like, you do have to be careful on how you're coming out of it and being aware of those things. Cause typically like you'll see people that get to like week four, week five of their fat loss phase. And like, oh, I'm just not motivated anymore. Like I just, food isn't satisfying anymore. And they feel like they're failing. It's like, no, this is like your body telling you it's uncomfortable and it doesn't want to be here anymore. Like that's all that is. So like, yes, that like you do have to like have systems in place and whatever to try and lose weight. But like you have to, like the more you understand how your body actually functions, it just helps you be more proactive about it, how to work around it, like be prepared and also like give yourself grace because we're so freaking hard on ourselves all of the time, which is like a whole other can of worms. But yeah, there's like so many backup systems for your body to maintain that homeostasis of calories in, calories out. And it's way more complicated than like people ever talk about.
What about what I think is a very dangerous idea to trust your hunger cues, our broken relationship with how we experience hunger now. Do you want to dive into that?
Oh yeah, totally. So actually Jared Hamilton and I, because we're friends and we've talked about this before, and it's like, everyone's like, oh, I don't want to eat when I'm not hungry. And it's like, hey, but if you're stuck in fight or flight, like your body is just focusing on fighting the bear or running away from the bear. It doesn't care about reproduction. It doesn't care about food. It doesn't care about fluid retention, nothing. Like it's just focusing on surviving. So like when you've been chronic dieting forever, like it's very common for women to be like, I'm not hungry. And it's like, yeah, because your body is so stressed and stuck in fight or flight. Like it's just trying to get through the day. So you can't trust your intuition because your intuition is broken. The way Jared said it was like, your intuition is like a child. Like you can't trust it. You really can't. And like, so when your systems are like working properly and your hormones are back to where they need to be and metabolism is good, at that point you can start to like more intuitively eat. But we like to talk about like mindful eating instead, which is like understanding how you're feeling, but understanding why you're feeling that way. So, okay, I had a really stressful day. I have zero appetite, but like it's really chaotic. It was emotional, whatever it was. I'm not hungry, but I know, oh, I should probably have a little more carbs today and make sure I'm eating supper, even though I'm not hungry, because like Otherwise, my cortisol is going to be really high and it's going to affect my sleep. And then I'm not going to do well the next day. And then I might binge the next day because then when I do relax, it's going to be overwhelming. So it's like needing to really understand all of those things. So there's a difference between like intuitively eating, just eating when you're hungry, versus like understanding why you're hungry or not hungry, and then making the right choices according to that.
Yeah. And so how would you work with someone that's new, that has been going through all this, these fad diets, nothing's working, because usually fad diets aren't sustainable. So how would you work with them if they decided that they didn't want to go through those fad diets anymore? They wanted something sustainable.
Yeah. So what we do first is we do like a pretty thorough intake with them. So figuring out like their past history, like what's their diet history, like exercise history, what do they do now, what their goals are, stress, sleep, digestion, energy. Are they having crashes? Are they having cravings? Are they cutting out certain food groups, figuring out where they're eating at right now? Like figure out really what's happening with their body and then explain to them what's happening to their body. But we have like a 4-week onboarding process where it's like, there's videos on like mindset, understanding, nutrition, your macros, how to track different hormones, how that affects your metabolism, a whole section on perimenopause and menopause, obviously. I'm talking about like sleep, hydration, like the 80-20 rule, like all of these things. So they already have this wealth of knowledge. So then once they start with us, they're like, okay, I already understand what's happening. Cause trying to do all of that and learn plus start trying to change your nutrition all at once is freaking overwhelming. And we all make the mistake of trying to change everything at once. So it's like, let's focus on education, understanding that first. Then you start with your coach. Then you start doing your XYZ, changing your macros or whatever it is during this time. They're learning to track. They're practicing all that stuff. They're learning things about eating more whole foods. But I think we have only ever had one woman out of like the 500 that have been through our program that didn't have to reverse diet first and eat more, because it is crazy how much people are under eating. Insane. Like I'm 5'5", I'm 145-ish to 140 pounds, depending on the day. I only work out like 3 days a week. I eat 2,200 to 2,400 calories a day to maintain. And people are like shocked. People come in eating like 900 calories, 1,000 calories, 1,200 calories. And I'm like, how are you not starving? Like I eat that by lunchtime. Like to me, that's, and it's so sad when you talk to people too, because they're so afraid to eat food. They're like, I don't know what to eat. I'm like, well, what do you like? They're like, I don't know. I eat because I have to. And I'm like, to me, that's so heartbreaking. Cause like I come from a Latin family. So food is like what brings people together. It's a very social. I was just in Nashville. The whole trip revolved around food. Like food is like such a big thing for us. So it's just like really getting them to like be curious and figure out what they actually like to eat again, or like eating bread again for the first time in like 14 years. Like when you tell people they can have toast, they're damn near in tears or they're terrified. It's like one or the other. So it's like just trying to get rid of those old beliefs and stuff, but it's like a whole new self-discovery of like, what do you actually like? Do you like having three big meals? Would you rather have smaller meals during the day? Like what works with your routine? Like it's just a lot of like really getting them to like figure out what they want. And we're kind of leading them and holding their hands along the way and not just giving you strict rules. Like, yes, we have like specific ones that we try to get people to do because it tends to be beneficial, like having your breakfast every day and things like that. But mm-hmm. like in the end, you want to be eating the way you want to eat. So if you don't want to be eating salad every day for the rest of your life, probably shouldn't be doing that in your diet because that's not sustainable. So it's like really figuring out what you want your life to look like and your eating habits to look like and enjoying those moments with your family. So there's a ton more on like the mindset lifestyle side of things. And yes, there's macros. Yes, there's like calories and all that stuff. But again, like learning to enjoy stuff again and figuring out what you actually want, enjoying the process, like that's what makes people happier and more compliant, because a happy person is typically going to do way better progress wise than someone who's not.
Yeah. And so obviously the metabolism, boosting your metabolism, hormones work together, but how does strength training fit into that?
Yeah. So strength training is huge. This is something we push all women to do. I'm always like, put down the baby pink weights. We're graduating. We're done with those. We're not doing those anymore. It's like, let's focus on getting strong. Like let's lift a weight like 4 to 6 times. If you can lift it more than 8, let's up those weights. And like, women are like shocked, first of all, at how much they can lift, scared at first, but they can do it. But then it's like, okay, now you're going to rest and just sit there for 2 minutes. And they're like, I am so uncomfortable sitting for 2 minutes. I'm like, yeah, because you're a cortisol junkie. Like, you have a high stress life, a high stress job. You're always go, go, go. You're not sleeping well. You're cutting your calories. You're cutting your carbs. Like, you were an adrenaline junkie in a different way. Like, you're not like a thrill seeker, but it's the same physiological response in the way that you're doing this. And like, especially if you're type A, very predisposed to like to move that way. So it's like, learn to sit, relax. And like, especially with perimenopause and menopause, like, have a really hard time accessing energy stores. Mitochondrial function's usually not as well. So it's like, you need that extra time to recover in between to actually get the most out of your workouts. We have a really hard time building and maintaining muscle mass because estrogen decreases. And then if your cortisol levels are high on top of that, that puts you in a very like catabolic state. So muscle breakdown. So again, it's a lot more challenging to build and maintain muscle, which is why it's so important to do resistance training, because it's easy to lose it and super hard to get back. And then people end up looking like the skinny fat look that everyone talks about and they hate, right? So it's like, this is how you get more fit or toned, like they say. Like, that's how you accomplish that, is through resistance training. And like, people always say, oh, I miss like the high of like the high cardio. I'm like, yeah, because you're not used to actually learning to chill the F out. Like, you're just go, go, go all of the time. So when you're resting, it's uncomfortable because it's so foreign, which is messed up. Like, we over glorify the like, go, 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 the go-getter, the person who's like burnt out, always working, like running on no hours of sleep, like crushing it all. And it's like, nah, that's not what we need. And especially when you're dealing with perimenopause and menopause, like, say goodbye to muscle mass. You're going to see insulin resistance go up. You're going to see fat gain increase. You're going to decrease your thyroid function. Like, no, like, do heavy lifting, focus on getting strong, take your longer rest periods. You don't have to be in the gym for hours. Like, 3 days a week, full body for like 45 minutes, golden. Like, that's great. You can do that. It doesn't have to be crazy complicated.
One of my clients literally today talked about this thing, the stress junkie thing, and how it was a behavior she learned from her mom. And she had to herself sort of discard was the fact that your value in a career space, whatever it is tied to how stressed out you are and how hard you're working, right? Mm-hmm. And that could sort of be a demonstration of your value to where you're working to others, or it can be just something that's very much internalized because you create that relationship one-to-one. And I had never thought about it that way. So any more thoughts on how to unlearn the craving, the emotional need to be constantly stressed and busy?
Yeah. So this was me actually. Like, I was very, like, you can ask anyone, my friends were like, we thought we had a friend, Steph. She was there somewhere. She's always working. Like, I was that person that was always go, 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 doing extra, constantly in like a billion certifications, seminars, conferences, like just always crazy busy. But that was like the only way I thought you were like successful. And then it took losing my mom to realize that, like, wow, like everything can change in an instant. It can be really sudden. And like, life just passes you by. And like, honestly, what is the worst thing that's going to happen if you take one day to chill? Like, honestly, like that's what we always ask. Like, that's the way I word things to people. It's like, if you didn't get that done today, or you didn't do XYZ, what is the actual worst thing that could happen? And people are like, I'm like, yeah, literally nothing. Like, you would be fine. And it took like, I'm like, and I don't want you to have to go through like some traumatic, brutal experience to have to realize that. Like, it sucked losing my mom at such a young age, and like, and it sucked that it happened so quickly, but it sure as heck has made me slow down and realize like, you need to enjoy life and the process so much more, because we treat life like a checklist. Like, it's like, okay, get this done, get this done, get this done, get this done. And it's like, okay, at the end of the day, is that really what you want your life to be, as a checklist? Like, no, life is what happens in between the check boxes. So like, let's enjoy that process. Let's relax. And it's like, okay, you're eating 1200 calories. Like, what is one ice cream going to do to you, really? Like, just one. Enjoy one treat a week. Like, is that really going to be that detrimental to your health? No. Like, what happens if you aren't go, go, go all the time? Like, it's going to be fine. Like, we're in a race to get nowhere. And to me, it just is so mind-blowing. And it's something that I talk about a lot now, because it's just like, we just over glorify this like burnt out thing. And I mean, when my mom passed away, I didn't take any time off. Like, she passed away in February. I hadn't taken off any time until like May, because my body made me, because I had a complete and total like breakdown meltdown, and then continued after like 3 days of doing nothing, put my foot to the floor again and worked really hard, and then had another meltdown in October. And now it's like, okay, I think I finally figured out balance, and like, this is the least stressed I've ever been, and like enjoying life more, and like probably the least that I've actually like worked like better boundaries around stuff, and definitely happier. And guess what? Life is still going on. Work is still going great. My health is good. Relationships are great. So it's like, what is the worst thing that's going to happen if you didn't rush around? Like, what would your life be like? Imagine what those relationships would be like, your self-talk would be like, how your sleep could be, your nutrition, your skin, your hair, whatever. Like, imagine if you just slowed down a little bit and like genuinely enjoyed the moment. Imagine how different things could be. And I think people just like, again, we just treat life like a checklist. And to me, it's so sad. And I like try to drill this into people all the time, because it's, once you enjoy things, life gets so much better. And it's actually crazy how much better your health will be.
Yeah. And a lot of the times people don't realize that mindset, like what you were talking about, it goes into every aspect, your training, your nutrition, your rest and your recovery, your sleep, all that kind of stuff. So can you speak a little bit more on how recovery, in terms of the things I just mentioned, your nutrition stuff, how that plays into working with your hormones and your metabolism?
Oh yeah, recovery is huge. Like, if we don't recover, cortisol is just up all of the damn time. And like, we're already in a life where, like, let's face it, I would say like 80% of our population, if not more, in like Northern America is like, just we're chronically stressed all the freaking time. Like, it's like something out of 9 out of 10 people don't get at least more than 6 hours of sleep a night, which is like, that's insane. And it's like, oh, we function okay on it. And it's like, no, I don't. Like, your body is not doing well. And I promise you that. But it's like, if we're constantly go all the time, we're not taking recovery in between. So like for working out, for example, we're just constantly breaking stuff down. We're never allowing things to recover. Plus, adequate sleep is when we're getting like our growth hormone to increase, which is where like a lot of muscle building opportunity is going to come from. So if we're never sleeping enough, you're going to have a much harder time building muscle mass, which in perimenopause and menopause, already a huge issue. But like, if our cortisol levels are always up at nighttime, our body is constantly in fight or flight. So it would almost be like, if you were constantly thinking about the world ending of every second of every day, that's what you're doing to your body when you're not eating enough and you're not sleeping. Like, your body, like, that's like, just thinking about that is so stressful. That's what you're doing to everything inside of you. And people are like, oh, that's aggressive. I'm like, yeah, it is. It's really crappy. But if you're not sleeping enough, like I've noticed for myself, if I don't get at least like 6.5-7 hours of sleep, the next day I will eat like at least 400 calories more in a day. Like, because like, I am just reaching for everything because my body needs energy. And let's face it, your body's looking for quick fixes. So it's chips, it's candy, it's chocolate. For me, donuts, very, very tempting to go get one of those. So it's like, if you're not taking that adequate recovery, it affects your whole next day. You're going to eat more. You're going to choose like items that aren't that great for you, which is going to lead to blood sugar spikes and drops, continuously increasing your insulin resistance risk. It's also going, when cortisol is high, it's constantly dumping sugar into your bloodstream, which is also combating like insulin. So they're constantly fighting each other, leading to more insulin resistance, which is already a risk factor when estrogen decreases, because that helps shuttle blood sugars into our cells. So we're already at a risk. So then we're just making it worse. So like, it leads to all those things, which then of course is going to lead to fat storage. And like, so if you just take the time to actually sleep, have a breakfast that has protein and has some higher fiber carbs, it is insane like how much that will benefit you in the long run. And like, carbs are actually, they bring cortisol down and increase melatonin, your sleepy hormone. So like, having carbs before bed can actually be incredibly helpful. Just make sure they're higher in fiber, pair it with some fat or protein, and you will sleep so much better. We do this with all of our clients, and sleep is always the first thing that improves with everyone. Like, people are like, I have not slept this well since I was a teenager and slept like 12 hours in a day. I'm like, yeah, it's amazing. Like, so it's just, that's why you sleep so well after like a turkey supper. Everyone's like, oh, Thanksgiving supper, it was the turkey. It's like, no, it's the potatoes and the bread and the pasta salad and like all the carbs that helped you sleep well. So it's just like learning those things a little bit better and realizing like, more isn't always better. More is just more. It has to be the right kind of more to benefit you properly. And in this case, it's typically more recovery and less work. Like, we have women that have been working out like 7 days a week and we tailor them back, start increasing their calories. They're only working two to three days a week. And now change is happening. Now they're seeing muscle growth because you're allowing that recovery in between for everything to recover. And you're hitting things at the optimal peak for muscle building because it breaks down, builds back up. Then you can stimulate it again. It kind of goes up in like a zigzag fashion. If you're never allowing recovery, you're actually going to see a decrease in muscle mass, which is like, that's annoying. Going to the gym every day and not seeing any change in your muscle mass or a decrease, that's the worst because you're putting effort in the wrong place and a lot of effort and not getting anything out of it.
How about this? I like pointing this one out too. And this is not fair. I mean, on average, women are smaller. They have less body mass. They have less lean mass. And yet you go to a restaurant and there's no women's and men's portions. And quite frankly, most restaurant takeout options are probably more calories than most people need. Then we have this obesogenic, you know, environment where a lot of food marketing, a lot of food is engineered, and we can think, oh, this is this nefarious conspiracy. No, it's companies maximizing profit and trying to make things the most appealing in a very competitive market for this stuff. And then on top of that, you have alcohol. And I think we now have a society where, I mean, people, but certainly women have this conflict where they feel like they should be entitled. And I want to be very careful. It's not stereotypical, but I know plenty of women who feel entitled to be able to have maybe a glass or two of wine, whether or not daily, but certainly on a regular basis, and to be able to eat the pleasure, comfort foods and the things that they enjoy and have all these things on a very regular basis, especially in serving sizes that, well, are maybe meant for men. So how do you combat that? And how do you get women to maybe shift attitude to say, well, we can have these things in appropriate boundaries, but we're not entitled to have as much as maybe we have been told we should be able to. And then we have this, hey, this is unfair. Just in the sheer volume that maybe I think some want.
Oh yeah. Like we did a training on alcohol once. So people are upset, but like alcohol, especially perimenopause and menopause in women, it's like, it affects you so much. Like it affects your sleep substantially. So people are like, might have a nightcap because they think they fall asleep better. Yeah. But your quality of sleep is so much worse. So you're not actually getting good quality sleep, which again, it's still going to affect your food choices and things like that. Energy crashes, cravings, blood sugar the next day. But it actually keeps your cortisol levels elevated at resting, like when you're not drinking. So it'll keep that elevated. And if you keep doing that over time, it'll constantly keep increasing your cortisol levels. Will also lead to fluid retention for like 3 days afterwards, which people like don't realize. So when you cut alcohol, it typically you'll drop weight pretty quickly, just because of that alone. But there's so many things that alcohol influence. And it also actually increases like impulsive behavior because when you're not drinking even, because it just like further strengthens those like neural pathways that you get when you're drinking. Like your body gets used to whatever you expose it to. It gets better at doing that thing, or it strengthens those pathways. So the more you work out, the more you're strengthening those neural pathways to build more muscle and like recruit more musculature. When you're drinking, you're recruiting more neurons in your brain to become more impulsive when you're not drinking. So that leads to, again, more poor food choices and things like that. More reactive, things like that. And let's face it, alcohol is a toxin. It's not good for you. And it also affects your liver. Liver has a huge impact on metabolism and your adrenals as well. Huge for like metabolic detox pathways, for like estrogen and stuff like that. So like estrogen dominance and alcohol are typically not great for each other, because there is like potential for testosterone to get converted to estrogen with that whole pathway as well. So there's like a whole bunch of negative things that happen with alcohol, but it's just becoming aware of those things. And the thing that really bothers me is like, okay, let's like, my friends know that I don't really drink. Like no one really bothers me about it anymore. I had some friends that like didn't love that I didn't drink. And I was like, eh. Like to me, it's just like, I would rather have cake than alcohol. Like that's just how I equate things to. I'm a food person, not a drink person. And if it's a drink, it's going to be super sweet, super fruity. Like I'm in it for the taste. So it's like just understanding how it actually affects your body. But like, it bothers me so much that like now taking care of your health is like weird. Like it's just not accepted. It's like, you tell your friends, oh, I'm not drinking because it gives me hot flashes, or I'm not drinking because it's been affecting my sleep. And they're like, oh, you're no fun. It's like, since when is taking your health seriously and wanting to improve your health and your brain and your body and everything, how it functions, weird? Like, you shouldn't be ashamed to tell people, hey, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing it as often because I'm taking care of my health. And like, when people are in a fat loss phase in particular, we really, really, really strongly recommend they don't drink alcohol if they can, because of the increase in cortisol. Going into a fat loss phase is a stress on the body. Alcohol, also stressful on the body. It's trying to combat toxins that you're putting into it. So I think just becoming more aware, but it's as little as 3 drinks per week that influence a female's body. Like, once you're going through perimenopause and menopause in particular, we're so much more sensitive. So if you're someone who's having like a drink every other week, you're constantly keeping your cortisol levels up. You're constantly keeping fluid retention up. Like, there's all these things that are going on that I think we're just like not aware of. And it's just too normal to want to drink, which, like, whatever, if you want to do that, great, but be informed with what it does to your body and make it a decision and take responsibility for it.
You hit on something really big, was the response of the people around you. And that's what's inadvertently happening, is your effort in front of other people to make healthier choices, whether it's alcohol or food related or exercise, is a shame trigger for a lot of people. And it's important we recognize that, because in the face of shame triggers, what do a lot of people do? They react in a way, well, they want the shame stimulus to go away. So I talk about this in terms of like sabotage, whether it's intentional or unintentional. People will often bring, I call them sabotage donuts, where all of a sudden the donuts start showing up at the office place when you're, you know, making nutritional changes, and you get the, oh, live a little, that sort of stuff. And That's a them issue. It's a 100%. Their discomfort with this stimulus that's in front of them, that's making them feel very aware of choices that they're not currently able to make, or their lack of effort, right? And now I honestly think that there's a counter to this too, because I think maybe some of the people want to make changes, and you, the person leading by example, can actually have a positive effect for the people around you. But it's very important to be very alert to and wise to these types of sabotage, so that way you're resilient against their effects.
Oh, totally. Like, Alex Hormozi said a quote when I was listening to one of his podcasts the other day, and it was like, it's pretty cutthroat, but that's kind of how he is. And I like that. Like, I'm that way. But it's like, it was something along the lines of, people don't actually want what's best for you. They want the version of you that best serves them. Like, that's how that is. So it's like, okay, if you really value that friendship, awesome. Have a real conversation with them. They should respect the fact that you're trying to do something to better your health, to better improve yourself. There is nothing wrong with trying to be a better version of yourself and a healthier version of yourself for your friends and family around you. But if they're constantly like trying to like pull you back, or like revert you back to a person you used to be, because let's face it, the person that you are working towards and why you're making all these changes for is not the person who you are now. It's not the person that you used to be. Like, that person's going to be different. They're going to have a different daily routine. They're going to have different relationships, different ways of talking to themselves. Like, all of these, like, you are constantly changing and growing, and sometimes people don't grow with you, and that's okay. Like, it's just a season, and people come in and out of your life for a reason, and it sucks and it's hard. And if you have those hard conversations with them and they're meant to be there, they will, and they're supporting you. But there are people who are inherently kind of selfish, unfortunately, and they want the version of you that best serves them, not what's actually best for you, which really sucks. And it's a hard way to look at it, and it's pretty aggressive, but I'm also that kind of person. So
yeah. Well, this was awesome. Lots of information for everyone listening. I hope they absorbed it all. You might have to listen to it over again.
Yeah. Stephanie, you genuinely are wonderful. And I think this definitely goes into some stuff that we haven't really touched on across our episodes at this point. So people listening are probably want to get more information. So where can they find you, your media?
Yeah, so we actually just started a podcast at the beginning of May, which is very exciting. It's called the Metabolism and Menopause Podcast. For my socials, like Instagram, you can find me at vitalityoet.stephanie. Then we do have a Facebook community where we do live trainings and webinars every single week for free, talking about different topics of perimenopause and health and fitness and mindset and nutrition and basically anything you guys ask for. We're like, okay, we can talk about that. And that's called Metabolism and Menopause by Vitality.
That's an attractive, alluring name to people who are looking for, you know, healthy lifestyle changes. You've been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. Everybody listening, of course, go check out what Stephanie's doing. And if you are, again, one of our listeners, you know, this is borrowing one from a lot of the other people out there who do podcasts, but the way that you help us grow and help more people is to take it and share it with someone in your world who you think would really enjoy this. And if you're someone who is new to our media because you found this through Stephanie's media, well, if you take a walk through, we have a lot of, you know, episodes that's just me and Bailey talking about a specific topic. Here's a hint. She's the boss and she's the brains behind this whole thing. But we also have a lot of great guests, and you guys may enjoy some of those other guests as well. So thanks for tuning in. Appreciate you, and stay tuned for next week.